Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, welcome to the 392nd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Max Goldberg. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Warren Kaplan, and today we have Sarah Mae Bates and Jeremy Connor. Sarah and Jeremy are a directing duo, a new duo. They're on the roster, Tool of North America. They're awesome. They're super funny. Sarah has an awesome background as an art director. She worked at many agencies. She has known Jeremy for many years, and they've teamed up before in the past. She wrote a short that he directed that was at Sundance. And Jeremy, you might know from Drunk History. That's his show.
He also had the Netflix show Waffles and Mochi. He's been around for a while. And what I love about this duo is that Jeremy has like a traditional television comedy background. He's very funny. He knows how to direct. You know, he's in that traditional world. And Sarah comes from a pure advertising background. And so combined as two creatives, two like-minded people who have known each other for a long time, they really create this awesome dynamic where they're complementing each other in terms of their skills, whether that's an understanding of advertising or a network of comedy people who've all binge drunk on television with you before. So it's a really cool combination. They're really fun together. We had our minds blown a couple times. I feel like Sarah had a few treatment moves that I'm sure you and I will start incorporating, at least in a philosophical sense.
Yeah, at least if we're pitching against them, we'll use their tricks.
Yeah, you will use their tricks.
Make sure they don't outsmart us.
Listen, I don't think they should sweat it either way.
Yeah, no, they're really cool. Yeah, Jeremy also shared some tidbits about Drunk History. And what I really found fascinating was just kind of, like you said, the connection between a TV director and a advertising creative coming together and how they push and pull to create something unique and interesting. And yeah, I think everyone will have something to get out of this. It's a long chat, so we're going to get into it very shortly, but we want to remind people we have a live show on October 18th. We have a panel of horror and genre film directors. It's going to be at the Sawhorse Productions House. It's going to be so fun. We already have a lot of tickets reserved. If you want to find out about this event, go to live.justshootitpod.com. There's going to be drinks. We got a pizza sponsor, Fresh Brothers. Mm-hmm. Shout out to them. We're super excited that they're going to be supplying pizzas.
And also, we're giving away a few bits and bobs, some treats from Black Magic. Black Magic Design is providing a few door prizes.
Oh, right. Like pretty legitimate ones.
Very legitimate ones. They're donating two Resolve Pro licenses.
The studio version, yeah.
The studio version, so like the big boy version. So I know Resolve is mostly free, but some of those premium, the extra good stuff, you have to have a license for. And even more impressive, we're giving away a studio camera G2. Pretty cool. It's one of the new ones they've just rolled out. It's very generous of Blackmagic. So if you want to get in the mix on that, if the incredible panel and the free pizza and the networking isn't enough, also we've got some free gifts from Blackmagic in the mix as well. So come on down live.justshootitpod.com to get your ticket.
If we're out of tickets, the one cheat pass, the cheat code to get a ticket is if you sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/justshootitpod, we will guarantee you a spot at the event. patreon.com/justshootitpod. You will be supporting us. You'll be helping us pay our editor and, you know, make this show self-sustaining. Okay, enough about Patreon, enough about us. Let's talk to Sarah and Jeremy. Okay, we are here with Sarah and Jeremy. Thanks for joining the show.
Sarah Mae Bates and Jeremy Connor, for the uninitiated.
So, yeah. Matt, I know you had a whole question, and I know you hate it when I talk about names, but I just have to jump in right now and say, so you guys go by Sarah and Jeremy, Sarah Mae. And if you go to the Tool of NA, which is like an amazing production company, congrats for being on their roster. It just says Sarah and Jeremy, and it never says Sarah Mae Bates, and it never says Jeremy Connor, like anywhere in the bio and anything. And I'm just curious if that's like intentional in some way, because even when you guys were pitched to us, you know, your PR person was like, hey, would you like to have Sarah and Jeremy on? They're these commercial directors. And you know, we get pitched a lot of commercial directors, and sometimes we'll like look them up and see what else interesting they have going on them. But with you, all we had was your first name, Sarah and Jeremy. And Matt was like, you know, that's Jeremy Connor of Drunk History.
Well, heads will roll.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm wondering, is that part of like what you're trying to do? Like just Sarah and Jeremy? Like, no. Like, are you trying to detach your commercial career from your narrative career and your art director?
No, not at all.
Not at all. No. I like this insight. I'm like, we will get on that right away. I don't even think that's probably just an oversight.
Both of you have backgrounds where you were working commercially, you were doing your thing, and then you decided to merge at some point and become not just Sarah Mae Bates and Jeremy Connor, but Sarah and Jeremy, right? Why do the partnership? Where did that come from? Walk us through the pros and cons of a duo.
We've known each other since we were five. We've worked together a million times on different jobs. Sarah's brought me in as a director on a bunch of stuff. She wrote a short that I directed. We went to Sundance with it. We've always really loved working together. I was always doing TV shows for the last decade, and commercial was just sort of a thing that, like, hey, if I have a day, sure. But I was never, I always felt like a really an outsider in this world. I always felt like, I don't know what I'm doing with commercials, and I would always have a treatment writer and a deck person sort of put stuff together, and sometimes that's good, and sometimes it feels you feel very detached from the thing, and you're like, did I say this? Show ended a couple years ago, Drunk History, and then my kids' show ended last year. And I've just kind of been really excited about getting back into commercials. And I was talking to Sarah, and we had dinner, and she was, she wanted to, you know, I'll let you tell it, what you were thinking. Yeah. But as you were
eating, waffles.
I got very excited about the idea of partnering with you, because you're like a ad genius.
stop. Yeah, well, so for the last 20 years I've been like a creative, an ad creative. I've been first I was an art director for about 5 years, and then I switched over to being a writer.
Can you just tell us, sorry to slam the brakes so fast, but just for like our more filmmaking listeners, we do have a lot of people that work in commercials, but what's an art director? Can you tell us?
That's a good point.
Use the term?
Yeah, because it's very different than on a production. So an art director, in the advertising world, it's like you work in teams for the most part, and there is a copywriter who's writing the scripts, and then there's the art director who is responsible for designing like the look, feel of the whatever you're going to put together. So in the case of broadcast spots, it's like you put together concepts for a TV commercial or a short film, whatever it happens to be. And then you pitch it to a client who wants to pay for it. And then after that is sold through, you hire or you send it out to production companies like Tool of North America, where we are rep. And then you get treatments back, and whoever wants to direct it, like, has to pitch on the job, and you hire the person that you like their vision the best. And then those creatives attend the shoot, and they're kind of just shepherding, for the most part, the client message and making sure that it's representing the product in the right way, has the right tonality, it's talking to the right people, all of the sensitivities for the most part. And they're also responsible for the post and like making sure the edit is to time and making sure that the copy is saying all the right things. And like they add all the graphics, they hire the graphics company, they hire the VFX company. So in the UK, it's a little bit different. Like the director gets to stay on board throughout the process. But here it's like the director leaves after the shoot for the most part. And in a good production with a good relationship, the director will get to stay involved in post and will be invited to have their rough cut first. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always happen that way, but like that's ideal. And then if I always want the director, if I'm the creative on a project, I always want the director to be involved in post because I've hired them because of their vision and because of their eye. So I want them at the color session. I want them to be at the mix. I want them to be weighing in on music, all of that stuff.
Right. And by the way, the reel that they sent you probably had a lot of director's cuts on it because they didn't like the client cuts or the agency cuts.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so you hired them for their post, you know, to some degree. And then just so crazy when they cut you out. And I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, but I went to the DGA had a panel of like all the nominated directors for commercials this year. And every single director talked about how much they worked with their editor, and they all brought on their own editor. Like Kim Gehrig at Some Such has like her own editor that comes and is, you know, doing these, and David Shane, like they're all so involved in post. And I think we, all of us here, at least on this call, know that's like where you make or break, you know, what you shot. Totally. It doesn't matter what you did on set. It's like, if the post is kind of phoned in or unintentional or overtaken by the client where they just want more and more product and more close-ups, then you don't have anything. You're kind of losing like the artistic integrity by the end.
I mean, that is happening a lot more with just editors being completely embedded with the director, and like that you can't separate that package. And on as a creative, it's not like ideal because it really is like you're letting go of control in some ways. Like, it's a good strategy though for a director for sure. Art directors have way more work. You're just comping things, and you have to like, you basically are like you're making a treatment, but you're making it in-house for the client. It's a shit ton of work. And I would say it's like very gratifying work, but at the end of the day, if I'm going to have somebody helping me, I'd rather have the art director helping me than, you know, and be the writer. So I think both Jeremy and I are like somewhat writers, and I'm more of an art director / writer. So I think, you know, as far as the way we split up our roles, I tend to lean in that direction anyway. Just I'm a very visual person, so I draw my roots in that way. And then after I became, I like rose
Sorry,
in the rank.
Can I ask you an annoying question about your old life before you moved into directing? So often you'll get boards that are so awesome that you're like, ah, dang, like I can pitch something different, right? Like somebody did a great job with like, they're an ace at Photoshop and they've really put things together. And you're like, I don't know what you want me to add to this. Do you know what I mean? And so I guess I'm asking, when you were an art director and you would see boards, like when you'd see treatments come in, did it feel like, were you ever frustrated when people pitched hard in the opposite direction? Or you get what I'm saying? Like, oh, like you have such a clear vision. And I feel like, oh, if I'm just yes anding that vision, that feels like I'm not doing my job. Do you know what I mean? Like you feel like you're supposed to pitch something further outside the box.
I think your instincts are right. I think for the most part, creatives want you to celebrate their vision and then like enhance it. So it's like it's a yes and. I think.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it really comes down to like, what's that extra little like shiny touch? It doesn't have to be big, but it's like some little, you know. And then I had this crazy idea where, what if we, you know, did a Steadicam shot where we're rotating around the blah, blah, blah. Like, and then I'd be like, ooh, I want that moment. And it's really just like that little extra touch that often allows you to choose somebody.
Well, that's great, because I've been scared that I've been phoning it in for the last decade.
No,
yeah, I did this thing with Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox a few years ago, and it was like for the, I don't know, this car that runs on trash, but not really, but like
DeLorean.
It was, I don't even remember. The Mirai. It was the Mirai.
Oh, yeah.
The Toyota Mirai. But it runs on methane, and then the methane, now people get methane from the, you know. Anyway, I did this short with them, but the way that I won it was by talking about how I was have like all of the best joke writers and that I will bring on some joke writers. And I like it. That was the thing that I made, really made, they told me were that like, I really stood out because of that. And I was like, oh, but that's the thing that you guys,
that's the shiny thing.
That was the shiny thing. Like, all right.
Whatever. Well, you know, we've seen Matt and I, because we've been doing this podcast for a while, we've seen a lot of like pitches, you know, for obviously commercials, but obviously like feature films and things. And for years I would see someone have like their business packet for their, they're trying to finance their movie. And they're like, here's our cinematographer. And here's this, our actor. And here's our producer. And it's like, I've never heard of any of these people. So why are you showing me them? And it, I always had that mindset of like, yeah, we'll hire a VFX artist. We'll hire a DP. We'll hire, like, it doesn't, like, I'm trying to pitch myself. And once I get the job, I'll hire those people. And in the last year, I've totally done a 180 on that.
Really?
And I've been really like, we're going to, here's the three DPs we're looking at. This guy did this progressive campaign. This guy shot She-Hulk, you know, for Marvel. And this woman just did Star Trek. And we're going to get this costume designer. She's a specialist at unraveling sweaters. Like, she did all these unraveling sweater gags on iCarly, or, you know, and I'm just like really building out like the rest of my crew as like something I bring to the table. And I think maybe it has to do with the fact that I was at a place in my career where I was like, didn't feel confident to ask those people that were like kind of top tier DPs and stuff, or things that had worked on, people that had worked on things that people recognized. So I just was like, hey, it's me. And then we'll get a great DP, you know? But like the fact that you're like, hey, I got some of the best joke writers in the world, you know, that I'm going to bring onto your project, and we're going to take your diamond and make it even more beautiful, turn it into a cubic zirconian, is like pretty valuable, I think. I'm curious about your relationship with each other, you coming from the ad side, Sarah, and Jeremy from the TV side. Like, I see TV directors and feature directors, and I'm like, wow, look at that dolly shot. Look at this Steadicam shot. Like, look at how he's thinking about something, and we pan over to her, and she does something, and we pan back. And when I'm making my shot list for the commercials, I'm like, yeah, that is like 15 frames that we do not have time for.
Yeah.
So how do you guys like attack runtime, like from opposite ends, or is that something that's on your mind, or do you just only work with the best agencies in the world so you don't have to worry about it? Long script.
I mean, I just trust Sarah. Like, Sarah's has done this 10,000 times. It's the coolest thing, having as a director who is, you know, loves doing commercials, but also I'm just like, you know, it's a different art form than TV, and it, having Sarah there to just be like, no, nobody wants to hear this. This is what they want to hear. This is how we need to do it. We should hire somebody to make an animatic. We should do that. And I'm like, oh, we can just ask for stuff like that. I didn't know.
Yeah. Timing is like God in advertising. It's like everything comes down to like what's going to fit. And that in many ways predicts whether or not, like, if you have a shit ton of product copy, you either have a bad spot or you trim the product copy. It's like, it's only so much will fit for it to still be good. And so I think like, yeah, a lot of our planning is just, we do animatics because it's like logistics are such that we need to know exactly what we can play with. And we also have to like figure out how much flexibility we can get before we even go on set. But yeah, I'm definitely, I would say that's like the way my brain is trained is like, I'm constantly editing the spot and like seeing where I can cut things. So yeah, the ad creative definitely comes in there.
How long have you been a team?
So we are relatively new. Brand. This is like a very Brand exciting thing where we are, you are at the genesis of, you know, we've done a few spots. We did this big campaign with Zooey Deschanel for Choice Hotels. We just did a thing for Honda. When this job sort of came up and we ended up kind of getting the job before we had officially signed. And then everything just happened.
Were you repped by a different company beforehand, or how did you get a job?
I was I was repped by Caviar, and they're incredible. I love everybody there. I was very happy there for a long time, but as they have gotten so big, it didn't have the same vibes that I had before, and I was already sort of feeling like, yeah, I want something different. I've been there for a long time, and when we decided to join forces, we went to Tool.
And were you repped, Sarah?
I had a production company I partnered with on individual productions, but no, I didn't have an official rep. We mostly have worked together on projects where I'm the writer for him for like whatever short he's doing, or we've done a lot of projects with Jack Black over the years. And then also I hired him as the director on campaigns that I was working on. And we kind of used it as a way to like hack the system. Because we had like such fluidity working together, I'd be like, hey, let's get a camera. I have this idea. Like, let's just go shoot it. I'm just going to like present it, and we're going to cut it, and we're going to like just throw it in the meeting. And we sold like a bunch of campaigns that way. And everybody like started to be like, hey, wait a minute.
So you're saying you would basically shoot a spec mm-hmm. in advance of anything going together. Mm-hmm. And then that's mm-hmm. how you got things greenlit. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sarah would call me and I would call up a DP friend, and he would come and do it for free. And I mean, one time he came with a Steadicam rig and was like,
yeah,
we ended up working with a DP, Stefan Chapsky, who did like Ed Wood and stuff, eventually on the job. But the guy who shot this spec, I think it looked better than the actual commercial. Like, it was great, and we did it so quickly and run and gun.
Good. Yeah, I would call, like, we'd call actor friends. They would show up at, like, you know, in Carson at like a dealership. It was like so run and gun and so fun. Like, there was such a like spontaneity to it. So yeah, in many ways, when we were recreating it, it was like a little less fun. You know, like, it's like, it's kind of cooler before.
But yeah, that's like, that's the spirit of everything that I've ever done. That's how Drunk History was made. That's how anything. It's crazy how many like things I've pitched and done and failed at that were supposedly the right way to do it. And then all the things that I sort of did where we're just grabbing a camera and just going out and shooting a thing. Right, like, and
everyone has to take 10 shots before we do this shot. And that actually works. Turns out
it worked.
An effective way to make films.
Fun fact, I am in the Parker Posey episode. Don't want to brag, but I am girl number two.
Whoa.
You probably recognized me.
#2. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. Congrats.
It was so fun. I had so much fun.
So I have a personal question. I mean, it's personal to me, not to you guys. I'm applying for the DGA mentorship program for episodic TV.
Amazing.
And it kind of all came about because I was hanging out with a couple of directors, a friend of the show, Kevin Berlandi, who was talking about how he made it through the strike because he had directed a few episodes of NCIS that aired. And I had no idea how much money you make every time an episode of a primetime TV show airs, which is like half of your rate, which I guess the DGA rate is like $48,000. So you get $24,000 every time your episode airs during prime time. And so if your episode airs twice in a week, that's $48,000. And it's okay if there's a strike and you're not making any money because your residuals are paying you. And I was like, dude, if you're making, so you're making like $100,000 off an episode of TV. And he was like, yeah. And I was like, so why are you doing commercials? And he was like, well, I don't do them unless they're really big commercials, but I would much prefer to do TV. So my question to you, Jeremy, is like, is that not a thing?
I mean,
that's not to spike to what
Comedy Central pays. I mean, let me tell you how huge the Comedy Central residuals are. Comedy Central is like, nowhere near that kind of a NCIS rate. And
it's weird because it's these shows that none of us watch, But they pay so much because I guess everyone other than us watches them.
Everyone else watches them. Yeah, yeah.
And what's been so maddening recently is that now that Paramount Plus exists, Comedy Central, like, they don't have to pay us really. I think we get like a little bit for putting up Drunk History or that show. Mm-hmm. I did a show called Another Period. I directed every episode of that and get like no residuals because it's their own platform.
And not even the first time.
Maybe the first. I have to go back and look. But basically, like when Comedy Central,
you're not getting like $100,000 check every week.
No, there was a nice time, you know, when like all five seasons of Drunk History were like airing in different ways on Comedy Central. But now, like Comedy Central is just reruns of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It's bonkers. Like there's not. It's not a network. It doesn't exist anymore.
Right. And didn't Brooklyn Nine-Nine, that was Fox or which?
Yeah.
What?
NBC.
NBC. NBC. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's all like, it's The Office and yeah.
So commercials is the way. Okay.
There you go.
I'm not going to submit this this application.
I mean, we're both also, you know, working, have TV stuff and we have... would love to be doing features as well, but you know.
Absolutely.
I'm curious, Sarah, you wrote.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
A short that was at Sundance. Like, how does that affect the rest of your career, like on the commercial side?
I mean, it looks really good on a resume. I mean, it doesn't really affect. I feel like that is one of the few festivals that and Cannes and the One Show, I think, are like the most well reputed and people care. Like, if you've been even shortlisted, it's like it's so hard to get in that show. So yeah, I mean, it was a big deal.
Do you put that in a reel ever? Like, do you guys use the Sundance piece when you're submitting?
It was a long time ago.
It feels a little bit like
yeah. I don't know. Maybe we should.
So long ago that the footage doesn't seem current anymore. You mean like format wise? It's so long ago.
DVX-100.
Yeah, we could probably format. I've seen different people's reels where they like intentionally make it into a small box inside of a 16:9. And there's something kind of like romantic about that. I feel like we could probably do something similar. We should look at that because it's great. It's got Jeremy Irons as a voiceover. We shot it like with no money and like grabbed friends for favors. And at one point, like filled my friend's pool with trash and like, filmed underwater. There were so many things that we just were like, all right, I guess we're doing this now.
it's harder to ask for favors now. It's harder. I was like, man, it really seemed like, I mean, I don't know. It's harder for me to ask. I think I'm just more uncomfortable asking grown-ups. Whereas there was a time where it was just like, yeah, why would anyone? We just got to, we're all doing it together.
Would you stop playing Madden for a few minutes to come help out, be an extra for us?
And now it's like, I got to get a sitter, watch kids while I come do this. How many minutes do you need me for?
I will say actors are always like, yeah, let's do it. Like, I've never had trouble getting people to come and like be in a role, but it's definitely like, like a person has to bring their gear. It's like, that. It is a harder ask to make.
You guys said that you've kind of known each other for many years. Did you find each other through filmmaking, or were you like childhood friends? Like, how do I find a Sarah to tell me what I'm doing wrong on all these pitches?
And be in the same class with that person for 12 years and don't fight with that person. And actually, you know what it was? Jeremy was so funny. He was always so funny. He actually made me pee my pants laughing one time. And
Like two weeks ago. But yeah, no, we literally, since we were 5 years old, we've been like, we've gone up through, you know, everything.
Did you grow up in LA?
Yes. We went to Crossroads, which is a very talked about school as of late. Oh,
yeah. Elon Musk's.
Elon Musk, yeah.
It went there.
Oh. And it has a reputation for being, you know, an art school as well, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of now there's like a lot of famous alumni. I think you mentioned working with Jack Black. He was a Crossroads alumni, right?
Yeah. You say that it's different now. Sorry, but there are probably a list of alum of people that went to school with you.
Yeah, but Jack Black wasn't famous then.
Sure.
Yeah. No, but. We just talked about this on the podcast about like your best way to succeed in Hollywood is to have parents that work in Hollywood. And so us, as people that didn't have parents that work in Hollywood, our best chance is to have kids, you know, and they, when they grow up in Hollywood. So if we put our kids in the Crossroads, you know, then they'll have their own Jack Black when they're doing like a,
it's true,
you know, a Channel 101 short that whatever turns into something big or, you know, however it is, like there is something about living in LA that makes your network just strong. Absolutely. You know?
In our class of 25, it was like Jason Ritter and Zoe Deschanel. And yeah, you're right.
Robert Towns was a dad that we would like go to functions and he was there. And Michael Mann was a dad and you'd hang out with him in the kitchen and... Mm-hmm. While your parents came to pick you up, and like it was surreal then, and it's surreal now.
It is like, I mean, I know we're joking, kind of, but like there is this thing that, you know, when you listen to stories, you're like, well, how I'm like a 40-year-old man, like how can I recreate what you guys had? But like, really, maybe you can recreate something like that for your kids.
Totally. I mean. So yeah, I did this kids show called Waffles and Mochi, and that was like
with Michelle. What's her name?
I can't remember. It was Michelle Obama.
With her husband,
Michelle Obama. She was it was star. It was her first TV show. It was an incredible experience, life changing, emotional. It was beautiful, and we were doing post during COVID and lockdown, and I was like, I need a voice of a kid for the intercom voice that like appears in every episode. So I just like went in a closet and recorded, and so he like ended up, you know, in the show.
I think there is also something about like you were able to stay friends because you stayed in Los Angeles for so long, right? Like, and because this is a town that's still a creative magnet, it makes sense that you all would be there, right? And so, you know, we talk on the show a lot about like whether or not you need to live in Los Angeles. And when we first started, you know, we were pretty adamant of like, yes, you need to live in a major market. You need to come live where people are creating things, right? So that you can, you know, get a text from your friend who wants to go do this weird video where somebody gets drunk and tells a historical story and your life changes, right? Like that wouldn't happen if if there were only 10 people who were interested in making comedy in your town, right? Like there's, it's just a numbers game, right? And then obviously the pandemic hit, people got used to working from home. Those chance encounters happened less frequently. And also as we're all kind of getting a little older, you're hanging out with your kids and not, you know, at the Echo or whatever. And so it's interesting.
Literally Matt and I were saying like, yeah, maybe we could move to Joshua Tree, you know, and still have a career in LA. Yeah, like who cares? Awesome, no one's in person.
I mean, but, you could say you're in LA and no one would ever know.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. But the other piece of advice that Matt used to always give people, and I haven't heard it as much, was like, go take a class at UCB, you know, and see who you meet.
It's kind of a reason I don't say that quite so frequently anymore.
Is UCB gone?
Yeah, mostly. And they've had some rough patches.
Nobody emailed me about that.
But that was the way. I mean, Drunk History, we made it specifically for Derek Waters's midnight show that he did once a month on Saturdays.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What was it called?
It was LOL. And it was just like a place where he would show, people would show dumb videos. And like, him and I made a bunch of the videos throughout for like a year or two. And that just happened to be one of them that was a really good one.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, no, like UCB was that's what it was. It was just like, it felt like where all the cool kids were hanging out and that you'd find the great talent and everybody was going to make it together. And now it feels just like some weird thing where it hardly exists anymore.
Right. But being in the room together is still like valuable. It's like, you know, I didn't go to film school, but it's like what we say is the value of film school is you're just in the room with these people that care about film, you know? And I'm assuming that in the ad world, it's funny. I work with a lot of agencies and I'd say like 70% of the like creative briefing calls I have, everyone on the Zoom is at their own house, like all these agency people. And I'm like, how are you making good stuff if you're not like Peggy and Don Draper, you know, like up all night in the room, like throwing spaghetti at the wall until something hits.
One of the great relationships ever on TV.
To be emulated, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally.
The North Star.
They made some great spots.
They did.
Yeah. You're definitely together for post, and that's like really nice. I mean, for concepting,
I don't say you would. I'm definitely like, I feel like post is, we were just in color. A few days ago, we were all...
I went to color this week in person, and it was totally different. And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I got to do this every time.
You're like, oh, my monitor has a yellow
flux.
Film I forgot to remove when I bought this laptop.
Flux is telling me it's like orange right now. Yeah.
I'm someone who cannot... I don't like sitting in front of a computer. I don't like sitting down. When I've had writer's rooms... I like every wall to be covered with like some crazy inspiration. And I mean, I just like, I need to be in person. I need to be on sets. I need to be around people. I need to, you know, throw ideas off of humans. I need to like also be able to just like open a door and be like, hey, can we just do this? Do you like this or not? Okay, cool. Instead of being like, hi, we're going to schedule an hour-long meeting to fucking go over this one stupid thing. But like, I guess it's just, I'm so ready to be done with Zoom.
With remote work.
Work. But I don't know.
Well, I mean, on that note, so Sarah, you kind of like came in as like the sharpshooter from the agency world. Jeremy was floundering at Caviar.
There's
Taika Waititi or whoever's on the roster was taking all the jobs. And Sarah, you're like, that's because you don't know how to be on Zooms. Let's join forces. I'll make sure we win these jobs and let's go to a fresh roster so we can make an announcement, you know, reach out to some podcasts, not tell them our last names. And so now
and it says from the website, don't ever let anyone know.
And so now are you like, what's the dynamic when you're pitching things? Like when you're on a call, when you're like writing a treatment, like how, I'm curious how kind of at this point, veteran TV director and kind of art director, creative, kind of joined forces to be like an unstoppable machine of hotel commercials.
I would say we share a brain and that we'll both probably say the same things, but we do have like a nice balance in how we deliver.
Yeah, Jeremy was just saying that.
And I think for the most part, I don't know, I'm definitely like more of the checking the boxes. Like, I know you're thinking all of these things. I'm going to make sure I hit on all of those things. And then
do you
I
rehearse
like
a presentation?
Yeah, we usually rehearse. So when we write our treatments, we'll write them in like a Google Doc. So we're both able to edit it and move stuff around. And usually what we're doing, it's like we know exactly what is going to go in it. And then we just embellish on that. So it's like we start with just like kind of the structure of it. And then Jeremy will do a pass. I'll do a pass on his pass. And then he'll do a pass on my pass. And then I start just plugging in, you know, the non sequitur kind of little glittery bits of like, what if it was like this? We just had this crazy idea, like maybe we build out this history and like this is the thing that comes about visually because of that history. And then I usually like to throw in stuff that I think that goes a long way, especially with like the post part of the process, which like graphics, if you don't have the money to hire a separate vendor to do your graphics, it's falling on the agency to do it. And I want somebody's help in like thinking through that process because I probably haven't had time to do that yet if I'm just getting boards out to people. So we usually try and include a piece about that, like giving some time and energy to like the cards. What do the cards look like? What is our backdrop
cool.
for them?
That's cool.
What are
That's
our,
great.
Could we embellish with some supers? Like maybe mm-hmm. we're bringing information in, like we don't have to say it. Maybe we're saying it visually. These are some treatments that we found that we think could be cool for that, that like give you this little bit of like an ironic twist or like make this tonally feel like it's in this other world that we love from the Spike Jonze video, or I don't know. Mm-hmm, it's like mm-hmm. all of that stuff is like, there's so much time and energy being spent to just even get boards to a director. So anything we can do to help solve future issues, I think goes a long way with creatives.
So that specifically talking about the cards is so wild to
inside
to hear.
Information,
it's
right?
So it's inside, I'm blown away with it. That's like, right. I'm like, oh my god, I can't believe I
like. Is that page 32?
Have...
you told me to not touch.
yeah, exactly. So are there other aspects of the pitch that come from that level of insight? Right, like as something a director wouldn't think of, or I wouldn't even realize that was my jurisdiction. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, mm-hmm. I think about the end cards, but not anywhere near as thoughtfully as that.
The timing, that was something that I never in a million years would have thought. Like, because for me, every time I've done spots on my own, I actually aren't even, I'm not even like, I'm just like, we'll just shoot the lines. And if it doesn't fit in the edit, like, unless it's a one-er, like, we'll figure it out. Like, it's not the end of the world if we have to, you know, cut a line or ADR a moment. But Sarah, in the treatment stage, was timing it out. We were recording. She was recording. And she was like, the fastest. They cannot get this copy in under 38.4 seconds. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's impossible. Unless, you know, like, and that,
in the treatment phase, you guys are doing.
Yeah. That. And she came. And yeah, as part of it, she was like, we should pitch some alts for mm-hmm. lines and ways to get it, and then record the copy that can be done in 30 seconds and show them that. And I was like,
yeah,
I'll just make a funny joke. And
yeah.
What I love about that, yeah, is not just that it's smart and you're thinking, what does the agency need us to do, you know, and how can we be like problem solvers, or, you know, kind of part of the team of to help solve the problems that the agency has, not that the director has necessarily. But I also love the idea that you're making additional, like an additional type of media, like audio, that's so mm-hmm. easy to make, right? You can just record it on your iPhone or whatever, but you have this treatment and you're like, hey, click here to hear this 28 second version where we get, mm-hmm. you know, two mm-hmm. extra seconds for this awkward pause or whatever. I found that additional media in a treatment aside from like a PDF or whatever is like, just gets people excited because they've seen so many beautiful, beautiful.
Or it's on a real mixed media kick.
I've been doing like video treatments lately.
I feel like we've all been in situations where, specifically with timing, where you see the copy and you're like, I don't know if this is going to work or not. But I would be...
You don't want to say this doesn't work.
Yeah, right? You don't want to say this doesn't work. And what's so next level about that as an idea is you're calling it out. You're saying, you're showing your awareness of the situation and what they're working on, and bringing them solutions that are clever and that you've thought through and you're ready to rock with before they even realize it's a problem, right?
Yeah.
It's great. It's really, really smart.
Yeah. One thing I always appreciate as like a creative director is like when somebody's already using their time to plan all of the possible production things. So it's like, oh, you're already invested in this and you're already moving through the process mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. making this a reality. And it makes me feel like so at ease and like, oh yeah, you're already on it. You know, like
what's an example of that? Like, oh, we'll shoot this in the morning and then when the sun is down and this person needs to rest, we'll shoot this, like kind of production logistics like that.
That is definitely refreshing. Helpful. And I always like to be inside on that stuff and like give people, you know, insight into like, this is how we're going to shoot the thing. And this is like the plan. This is how we're attacking it. But I think more than that, it's like when you get into edit, these are the things that we know we can't touch. This is like the thing that's got to be perfect. This is the thing that's got to be said over this thing. Here's some ways we can get wiggle room around this mm-hmm. side and this side. So it's like you're being strategic.
I also really found it unbelievably fascinating and helpful. I wish I could remember exactly the moment. I just remember that I was really obsessed with like it was like a camera or a, like some technique or lenses. I was like really wanted to like, and you were just like, I'm telling you, these people will not understand any of what we're yeah. this stuff. Like, this is the wrong thing to be presenting. Like, I know that we get excited about this, but this is not the thing that will impress anyone.
Having seen eyes glaze over a couple times, many times, certainly.
Right. You're like, we got the signature primes instead of the master primes. And it is going to rock your freaking contrast levels in an imperceptible way.
Yeah. Are there other things that that Sarah, have you been like, hey, don't bother bringing this up, we'll get to it eventually, besides the technical stuff?
I think sometimes music is one of those things, just because I think sometimes directors want to, sometimes some people like it, but I think sometimes directors want to be like, I envision this track and like it mm-hmm. could be, you know, what if we did this thing with sound design? And it's like, in reality, there are so many negotiations that have to happen and like so many people, there are too many cooks. So it's kind of like, okay, thanks. It's almost like mm-hmm. a little bit of like a, not an insult, but like an annoyance if a director is pushing for a track. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, if it's like Michael Mann, I'm like, tell me if I've just come to you for you to do your thing. Like, I want to hear your opinion on all fronts. But I feel like, you know, for the most part, if it's like, I appreciate your thinking, but like, we don't need that, you know?
Well, Sarah, I'm curious also, because you're teamed up with Jeremy, who like clearly it worked on this show that everyone has heard of. Like, is there, when you've been on the other side, is there like a way to kind of drop that information without looking like thirsty or boastful, or do you not even mention it? What's a good way to kind of like tell people your experience and you've done cool things and you've worked with cool people without seeming annoying about it? Does that make sense?
I don't know if we've perfected that by any means. I mean, I think humor and storytelling is the way to go. Always. I mean, I feel like everyone wants to hear a cool story. So if it's couched in that, it's like a little anecdote. It's like that type of thing, I feel like goes so far on sets too. Mm-hmm. They're going to tell that story to the next person they meet and the next person that asks them about their experience. Like, everyone wants to hear a funny, cool story that relates to famous people.
Right. Do you think the intro to a treatment should be like kind of personal, like how you connect
Absolutely.
With? And so when you're a duo, how do you guys do that?
just say use the word we. I mean, the treatments are not drastically different than anything you've done, like, or we've done in the past.
Yeah.
No, you know, when we were first did Drunk History, when we were first like traveling around the country, there was like a couple, like the first couple days, it was like, oh, we're all going to be drinking together. Yeah, I will take shots with everyone. And it was like day two. I was like, what am I doing? This is horrible. Like, I don't know what's happening. Why would I ever think directing drunk would make any sense? Like,
funny.
You have to be so on top of things.
Yeah.
Directing is like a very overwhelming, all-encompassing thing, which I think is very good for me because I have like ADHD and I can't sit still and I like need to have like full immersion. And I feel like directing is the perfect way to, you know, the perfect outlet.
I'm curious, actually, with the drunk history of it all, I imagine part of why maybe you thought, oh, it'd be a good idea to drink with people early on was to set them at ease or to like build a little camaraderie or something like that.
It's actually because everybody wants me to drink. It's me turning it down. It's harder to turn it down. It's like everyone just, when they're taking a shot, they just pour me one and they're like, you gotta do it too, dude.
Did you have any moves, though? Did you have like a way to like kind of set a tone where you're like, hey, don't worry, this is still very chill. You're going to drink, but I'm not going to drink.
I'll pour myself. I always pour myself something and I'll be like, dude, we're cheers.
Yeah.
We're all in this together. But then I throw it away. And I'm like, I can't. Yeah,
you're just like Batman. You're just secretly dousing champagne.
It is interesting. I feel like there is kind of this thing as a director, which is you don't want to ask your actors to do something that you would not be willing to do, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, but you also can't direct while you're jumping off a building, right?
Yeah. I mean, unless it's like a stunt performer or something really specific.
So I'm curious, because you it sounds like you really hit the ground running. Things are going great. And you both have your own separate histories. You've been around long enough to know, like, oh, this is a cool opportunity to start fresh. What are the big picture goals? Like, what do you want to do in commercials long term? Is it just as simple as like work consistently, or are there anything loftier than that?
I mean, Super Bowl, definitely. Sure. I feel like it's like, you know, I mean, it's, there are so many downsides to a Super Bowl campaign, but at the end of the day, it's like the coolest platform. Just, I mean, whether or not it even runs on TV could be just something that's launching during Super Bowl. I would love to compete on that stage, you know?
Super Bowl commercials are the Super Bowl of advertising.
Whoa, you just blew my brain. Super Bowl would be great. And I think, like, we really enjoy doing long form. So I think, I mean, we're working on some other projects that are not necessarily just ads. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be a great, I think a lot of things are going to move in that direction. Branded content is not necessarily just like Pepsi. Oh, I'm just going to, you know, like, it's not like product placement. It's definitely like, you know, air. And like, there's so many movies now that are like long commercials. And I think I would love for us to do some project like that. That's like, it brings all of Jeremy's skills and history and network and all of that stuff into a way that like represents a brand in like a much more entertaining way. No offense to commercials, but I feel like longer form commercials are great for brands, but like not a lot of people finish them. I mean, sometimes they do, but for the most part, you're doing that for yourself. You're not doing that for the audience. Like, the audience is like, their attention span's so short. So to be able to do narrative, I think would be amazing.
Yeah, I think there's some good examples of those. If listeners are interested, Rebecca Niles, who was on our podcast, she's the EP at Art Class. She was also on Jordan Brady's podcast recently, and she was talking about this Instagram short film called Small Fries that Some Such made. It's this director, Vincent Haycock. That's like, it's like a 3-minute short film about these two girls that use Instagram, and it's It's good. It's just like watching a short film at Sundance or something. And even I really like those Mark Malloy Apple spots, you know, where it's like the foursome that's putting, trying to come up with like new packaging ideas. And it's just, they're using Apple products the whole time, but it's just real character based and fun and intense and shot beautifully and cast like super well. So
I think one of the things that we're both really excited about is also trying to get, do some really fun visual stuff. Feels like everything's going in that direction, and we're so itching to, you know, when we send each other like every single, you know, cool thing off of like eye candy or whatever. Yeah. If you know, are you, you know, like we're just like, oh man, we got to do this. It's so cool. Like, you know, I feel like we're really excited about, and I know that a lot of times for me in the past, the spots that I've been sent have been like, it's a, you know, two guys in a, in a, you know, bar or whatever. And I'm like,
I've done bars.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. It's interesting. I've noticed that trend of like hyper visual, like maximalist visuals as like a thing, even in comedy. And it's funny because like my bread and butter is like two guys in a bar or like on a couch, you know what I mean? And like, not that I don't love that intense visual stuff as well, but like a quiet, subtle, super funny commercial doesn't feel like it's breaking out or breaking through the way they used to, you know what I mean? Something that just like catches you by surprise, even like a Geico spot or something like that. Like they're the joke density and the intricacy of them is just like, it's just you know, we're just trying to get more people's attention basically. So like it's a drone shot into a probe lens with a match cut and then, you know, some crazy VFX move as well, plus a joke.
I mean, just because it's all being like you're scrolling and you got to hit you. That's how people consume.
Yeah.
And so it's like you got to hit.
Fast. Yeah.
My theory is that stuff is going to like not be so cool in a little bit. Like it's already like there's, you know, everyone knows there's this Instagram channel profile called the Eye Candy, and they have a website and they post cool visuals from commercials, and like every art director knows about this, so they're referencing all these things in the boards, and they're like, I've literally gotten scripts where it's like vertical spin transition to here, we do a someone falling through their bed here, and it's like all this TikTok inspired like hand covers the camera, his camera spins. Like when you're the director and like the art director is already telling you like how to shoot this thing because they saw some cool thing on Instagram. I think you're kind of losing a little bit of like the art and like the storytelling, right? You're like now just looking to do cool techniques. And then from like a technical standpoint, like they're referencing things that are shot on iPhones, but we're trying to shoot them with like Alexa 35s with anamorphic lenses. And you need to build these giant rigs and you're spending half a day to get this shot that's not really telling much story, you know?
All right, you're talking me off the ledge. I appreciate it.
No, I mean, I'm
excited about that stuff, but you're right. It's also like not in me, you know? It's not like, though, there are people who, the second they got an iPhone, have been in their house, you know, like this is what they love to do and what I love to do. Is to like just make something funny that people laugh at and has nothing to do with. There have been a number of things where I've been like, no, it has to look worse because otherwise it's not funny.
Right. Well, something I can't get out of my mind is we had this director, Claire Scanlon, on the podcast. She used to be an editor and she edited like the Mindy project pilot, and she was an editor on The Office, I think.
And directed on The Office. Yeah.
And directed on The Office. And she said what she tries to do in every scene is just have a dynamic start, you know, like bad 50-year-old example is like the server is carrying like a tray and we follow with the camera into the scene, but just something. So like, I'm not saying there isn't room for these like super dynamic, cool visual things. Like, you know, Euphoria, I think you did like an excellent job of using all these like amazing visual things, and they're shooting on like 35mm film and stuff. But I think in commercials, like there's just this like hunger that's created by I think a lot of creatives, to be honest, that are just like on TikTok and on Instagram and looking at Behance and Pinterest and whatever, and are just like, oh, we need to do this like cool transition, this cool move and this cool thing. And as directors, we have less and less to latch onto from like this hilarious character that's sitting on the couch, you know?
And I think that a lot of that is also coming from like there's so many shorter spots now. Mm-hmm. Like the average of a spot is 15 because it's like going to live on social and it's going to be broadcast. So it's those types of fluid movements allow you to like cover more product and also like cut faster. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, well, you know what lets you cut faster is a cut. You know? Like,
I think you guys are trying to talk us out of this can take.
That's right.
You can keep all of the
ignore the Insta 360 box.
Pitching on this
transitions for yourselves.
You know they're not into visuals, right?
Visual. Just want something static. Go for it. Whatever you need.
Well, I don't know if you guys know Harold Einstein and Dummy Films, but he's like the master of static hilarity. His stuff is so funny. Camera almost never moves.
Yeah,
he's got a spot. So, I know this is a,
and it's super visual.
He's got a Little Caesar spot where the guy's got a. He's in a full arm cast, and it's like they ask for a dollar for whatever product they're selling, and
$5
pizza, and the guy screams and busts through the plastic cast to pull out the $5 from his pocket and hands it over. It's one shot. I've watched it 50 times. If I just did that commercial over and over again forever, I would be happy. It is so funny and so elegant. And I guess I'm just mourning.
And the irony is the man could have used his other hand.
That's amazing. So,
it wasn't in the cast. Joke.
So it's so perfect.
It's a great joke.
Anyway, sorry.
David Chaffee also has a lot of just like, oh, that's it. You just did like a one wide shot. And it's so good. It's so much better than, it's just like so simple. And the joke is that they're small in the frame.
And that's that, right? And that we know how hard it is to do that. Right. To do one shot perfectly and to cast it right, to make sure that the look isn't getting in the way of things. It feels natural and relatable, but still eye catching and poppy. That's so much harder to me than a lot of the trendy stuff. And nailing the trendy stuff is hard, too. Right. Like, I know we're joking back and forth. The visuals are equally challenging and interesting, but I guess I've just spent my whole life trying to do one shot perfectly. And to feel like that's not in vogue right now is giving me.
Yeah. I think it also depends on the subject matter, you know, because like if you have a spot that's like, you know, not going on anyone's reel and it's like, it's just food or it's just whatever, a bottle of a thing, it helps to have like so much visual, like style and fluidity and like movement just to like give them something to feel proud of. And I feel like it's like case by case, or like a Lowe's commercial, for example. It's like that can kind of make it. It's like when you're moving through bushes and then now I'm over here and now I'm like,
are you talking?
Yeah, I love a good shelf.
There is a great Lowe's campaign running right now, actually, that I was like, oh, this is awesome. Anyway.
Yeah, where they put the camera in the like washer.
Yeah, it's in the washer and it's like maybe like in the ground as they're planting things and stuff as well. It is really good. That's a great call, Sarah.
It made me think of Breaking Bad. I was like, this is like the intro of Breaking Bad.
I think it's on Disney Plus, and as a parent, maybe that's where it's coming from. Anyway,
probably one of the same.
You have ads on Disney Plus?
Yeah, it's awesome. It's the best way to see ads.
Interesting.
With Drunk History, I got very, very fortunate that like I was able to have to like every single day play with like a new toy. And we were like, okay, today we're doing a 70s thing. So we got like these old Russian lenses and we're going to use this rig that like does this weird thing with the thing. And we're going to shoot in this, like we would just, I really got to play around with, okay, we're doing this. This is a boxing thing. It should be a Raging Bull. That's how I wanted it done. It was, you know, Terry Crews and Tim Heidecker and like shot and Weird Al as Hitler. But it was shot like Raging Bull and it was awesome. But all of that has also, I do think there's a really fun way to get visual style into comedy as long as it's helping the comedy and making it's kind of part of the joke rather than overtaking the joke and just being like, what? Why is that, you know, hat on a hat?
This was so great. Do you have a few more minutes to hang out and endorse with us real quick?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Unpaid endorsements.
I've got two endorsements for this week. One is this website, Quizlet. Are you guys familiar with Quizlet?
No.
I came across it very randomly. Essentially, it's just digital flashcards for like, I guess for like studying or whatever, but it's all something where you can essentially create a set of study cards and they're shareable on the internet, basically. So I came across in doing some research, somebody had made a Quizlet Sundance Buyers 2020 flashcard set. So it was literally every executive who was buying movies at Sundance that year and their name and their picture. And you just like, you'd click and it'd flip over and then you click and it'd go back. I mean, maybe that's interesting to you, maybe that's not. But I, as a person who has always felt like a little behind, I was never at an agency, I was never an assistant. Like knowing who the players are in a specific environment, like a film festival or something like that, like having a clean way to like study up and just feel a little bit more empowered, I think it was kind of mind blowing to me that like, oh, someone has already made this thing and most of this data is still probably pretty valid. So, you know, if you were at a bar and you met somebody, you might recognize that they were at A24 already because of this quiz. Quizlet, the Sundance Buyers deck is, you know, Googleable. It's very clear. But just in general, the idea of trading notes digitally, I think is kind of interesting. And for an anxious person, made me feel a little bit better. So that is my first endorsement. My other is the movie Renfield. Did you guys see Renfield?
No.
No.
No one saw Renfield. It's on, I want to say Peacock, and is going away soon. It's on a few of the streamers. And I think just the license is expiring relatively soon. And it was pretty fun, actually. Like, better than I think people gave it credit for, and certainly worth your time. Like a fun, weird, stylish
vampire movie, right?
Vampire movie. Nick Cage is Nick Cage in it up. So Quizlet and Renfield are my two endorsements.
I have one that is not as good, but I'll just do it. It's your Silver Lake. Maybe you've even sampled it. For $5, Pizzana, you could get a ball of their dough for $5.
Oh, and really?
The dough is spectacular. And
does it come in a bag? Or did they just, gestured with your hand?
Yeah, like you hold your hand out and then they just slop it in. you open
you don't
your
give
mouth.
Them flour first. And then,
yeah. No, it's like it's a little plastic container. You can also then get like tomato sauce and mozzarella and like do a whole thing, which is obviously great, but I haven't done the full thing. But I have now done a couple times when I'm driving by, just go in, grab a ball of dough, and then your pizza game at home is like a billion times better than anything.
It's better than like the Trader Joe's, Whole Foods.
It's a million times better than that.
Sarah, what you got?
Oh man. Okay. I have related a plug for Traeger pork and poultry rub and applewood. I would say that's like my go-to. I have a smoker. I have a green egg smoker and it's like my meditation. I like to be outside for the entire day. I like to be smelling applewood smoke and the Traeger rub. I don't have a Traeger smoker, but the rub is excellent. And I also double it as a way to make burgers more appealing to my children. So if you take a little handful of it and you mix it in your burger, it all gets eaten. And then also Resort Pass, if you have not heard of it. I am a huge fan. You've done it.
What is Resort
in Hawaii? Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Resort Pass is like you basically can rent a pool at a hotel for like the day
and without staying at the hotel.
You don't have to stay there. So I've been doing the Fairmont like once a month I go there with my kids. You have access to the spa. You can hang out at the pool all day. You get cocktails. You get a discount on the cocktails. You get discounts on the parking.
How much is it for the Fairmont for a day? Is it like a $200 type of deal?
No. I want to say it's $35 per person.
Oh, wow.
It's like totally doable. I mean, when you have four people, it's like you got to make an investment. But I would say like three to 4 hours, it feels like you went on vacation. It's awesome.
Yeah. So if you have kids, you should go to DeSano's Pizza. I think there's a few of them, but I go to the one on Santa Monica Boulevard, and it's close to Los Feliz, or I don't know where it is. But for, I think it's like $12, they bring you all the ingredients to make a pizza to your table. And your kids, instead of like talking to you, you have them make a pizza. Then you can have like a beer or some wine. And it's indoors. So I think I didn't know much about it because of COVID. And when my kids turned the age of, you know, like pizza parties. But now we go to DeSano's and the kids just run around, and because it's indoors, they can't like escape to anywhere.
Oh, I love that.
And they make their own pizza, and like one kid's pizza, one of those make your own pizzas is enough for like two or three kids. And it's awesome. They have, drinks.
I've heard about this. I have to go.
Giant parking lot, free parking.
Free parking. Yeah.
Love it.
So that's a very LA one. I have this tweet I saw a few weeks ago from this guy. His name is John Finger, at Mr. JonFinger. He's a filmmaker. He's like really into AI. He's like a director like us, but he also like has been messing around with AI a lot. And he made this previz video where he's acting out all the scenes in like a movie. And it's just like as a test. He's like, you can use this stuff for previz. And he's acting out this whole scene just shot in one shot. And he's acting out all the characters and then using AI to kind of create, this action film previz with like nothing, just him literally on his sidewalk in front of his house. And this is like using like the first generation of Runway's AI tool. So like clearly this will be getting better sooner, but I like when I'm pitching to act things out, and imagine like if you could just kind of have these characters, acting things out. It would be nice for an animated GIF.
This will be my other unpaid endorsement is the like Adobe with the generative fill and Firefly and stuff now that it is incorporated so perfectly into the Adobe suite, it has been life-changing for me, where I'm just using it. It's now becoming second nature. It's like the stamp tool, but instead I'm just generative filling I just like using it on images up. And it's spectacular. I'm just like, oh, this is like the most powerful tool. This is much better than me even typing stuff. I mean, unless I'm like trying to create like an alien creature, it's like, if all I'm really trying to do is just do like, take this thing, but just like make it a different thing. My go-to is that. Anyway.
If people want to find out more about what you all are doing, you guys tweet and you're on Instagram. How do we follow Sarah and Jeremy?
We are Sarah and Jeremy Direction on Instagram. And
Jeremy Connor with a K on all media sites.
I'm Sarah May B on Instagram.
If you have any questions for Sarah and Jeremy, if you want to keep track of what's going on with them, you can always email us at justshootitpod@gmail.com. We can forward any questions along to them, or you can just tweet at us at justshootitpod or at justshootitpod across all social media. And I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram and Threads. And this episode was edited by Noah Bayshore. Our producer is Tyler Small, and you're listening to music from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.